Accession number 19055, Reel 3.
Brigadier Rendell, Reel 3.
The task I was given was the defence of the battalion area. A whole lot of buildings, mostly thatched roofs, some with tiles on, red tiles, but a stone wall around this cactus hedge, a lot of big stones. And everywhere we went were huge bits of stone. We dug in as best we could, and I got the 1.5 sections reasonably undercover. And towards, I suppose, tea time, if there was any tea time, I wanted to go to the loo. So I went outside the cactus hedge and lowered my trousers and did the usual thing. And while I was sitting there, squatting there, I saw a dot on the hill opposite us, which was moving. And it was quite obvious to me that it was someone with a helmet. And then I saw another one. And so I quickly finished my toilet and came back. And at that moment, Keith Mountford, my second-in-command, arrived, and I explained to him what I'd seen. And with our glasses, we went along, and through the hedge, we saw many other dots. And they were obviously soldiers. And I said to Keith, I think they're Krauts, they're Germans. And he said, no, no, they might be Americans. And sure enough, they were Germans. And he told me that why he'd come was to say that as soon as it got dusk, we were going to pull out, and the sign would be John would blow the gong away on his hunting horn, and we'd go through the farm and head, I think again it was Fort Medjez El Bab, which was east, I can't remember correctly. But anyway, that's what we were going to do, run through the farm. Well, now, in between times, we had had, you could see, these chaps forming up, and then machine gun fire started again, very, very close. But they seemed to be on fixed lines firing above us. They were going over us. And then the mortars started to fire. And they caught the thatched roofs on fire, and so things weren't very clever. At one time, we scuppered an attack coming down, and we killed about four people within 50 yards of us. But I had great difficulty in controlling the fire because we were quite low on ammunition by that time, and I'd already asked Keith to let us have some more, but we hadn't got any more. There was no supplies to us. And so I was desperate to keep the fire down. And the very next time, we scuppered a really big attack of about 50 men, and I don't know how many we killed, but within 100 yards of us, there were several bodies and chaps screaming and shouting and things like that in front of us. And that was that one I could control very easily and stop the firing when it was necessary. On the way back, I walked back with Keith to company headquarters. And some Germans were very close to us, the other side of the hedge. You could hear them talking and shouting. And it was getting dark. Pistols were useless. We only had 3.8 pistols with us anyway. And I said, we'll use the bombs. We each had 2 Mills bombs. And so we hurled these things over in the required style, lying flat on our faces when we got them going, and they burst with satisfying crumps and lots of yells and screams and things like that. So we were quite happy with that. And Keith again said, now don't forget, as soon as you hear the horn, off you go, and come up through the farm, and we'll all join up. And then he said to me, you know, Dennis, you must be quite unique. You're probably one of the few British officers that has had his trousers down in the face of the enemy. Anyway, he went off, and I never saw him again. When I went back to platoon headquarters, we really started to be mortared very badly. And one or two chaps were hurt, and I can remember hearing these bombs coming down. And that is the last I recall. Nothing more, nothing less. But sometime later, I woke up desperately cold with someone trying to take the pistol out of my holster. And it was a German in a kind of khaki boiler suit with a helmet on. And he was trying to take that off. And I tried to help him. And I couldn't because my hands were so cold, everything was shivering. And then I found that my right leg, blood all over the bloody place, and I could get up like I was lifted up by two Germans and put in one of these motorcycle sidecars, which they got the other side of the hedge. None of my soldiers were there. None. There were two dead chaps who I didn't know who they were at the time. And they said, Mort, all over. And they took me to what I thought was a regimental aid post. And it was very satisfying for me to see that there a line of about 10 bodies of Germans that we had killed. So we had done quite a bit to this. Anyway, they patched me up and they took me to the into Tunis, to the main hospital, which they had taken over.
What do you surmise had happened as far as your wounding was concerned?
Well, it was a mortar being hit at my shin here, and I bled a lot, but it really wasn't a very terribly bad wound. Anyway, they patched them up in Tunis, and they put in the regimental aid post, which I think that's what it was, not a doctor, but a medic, put bandages around and a tourniquet and that kind of thing. There were several of our chaps there.
And where and when do you think the wounding took place?
Well, I think it was that last lot of bombs that I heard coming. What I remember when I woke up in the morning with this chap pulling my belt was that a terrible smell of sulphur, which are just like school experiments, in the lab. Awful. Anyway, that was that. And that was the last I really saw of the battalion. The battalion had gone. And that was it.
Do you know the date when you were wounded?
Yes, I think it was the 4th of December, I think.
And whereabouts would it have been, this place?
Well, that was at... now, I've got the name of the farm, and that's why I brought up that book, which I will be able to tell you later.
Yes, please.
There we are. And that was that. Now, from there on, I got another pair of trousers, which they gave me in the hospital, and I think they were Arabs' trousers. They were like blue overalls, because mine were useless. And one of the things that they hadn't found was I'd got my fighting knife in the corner, in the pocket we had in the slip. And so I managed to get that out and kept it in, made a hole in the other trousers and put it in the side. But I realised that really... it wasn't the kind of thing that was going to be much use to me. And I thought, right, what I must do is to get away. And I simply walked out of the ward as though I was going to the loo, which was outside. And there were all these terrible kind of Arab-type loos, that you have to stand up in. And I simply walked down two flights of stairs and out. I suppose I looked, in a way, like a civilian. I hadn't shaved for over a week, I suppose, by then. And I was scruffy, hadn't got a hat or anything like that. I walked out of the hospital, but I didn't know which way to go. That was a terrible thing. And I thought if I could find the main street, then I might be able to get some advice from someone who spoke French there. But I never found the main street because I was picked up by some German Polizei with shields on them and taken back to the hospital. I told them I'd come from the hospital, so it was easier. From there, I was taken after... 3 or 4 days, I suppose, I was there. Taken to the airfield at Tunis, where we met a chap, a Luftwaffe officer, who said we were going on a Messerschmitt 623, which was a huge aircraft. And it had six engines. It had been designed as a glider in France, and they had found some French engines which they'd put on, and I think they'd made about 30 of these things. Well, they were terribly slow. They had a stupid little gun up in the mid kind of upper turret, and that's about all. They could take Mark IV tanks, this chap told us, so they could get at least 120 POWs in, he said. And we were marched in here and into this aircraft, which had railway sleepers on, because they'd obviously been taking AFVs. And we eventually took off in this thing. Well, I was terrified, because I thought if we go over the sea, we'd only have to find some British aircraft that'll shoot us down like flies. And in fact, they did that The aircraft they used for that were those twin engine things. Not a Blenheim, but much better. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But we got to Sicily completely unharmed, and I was delighted to get there. We landed at a very difficult airfield, right up against some rocks. And we were put into a kind of pigsty where I met lots of other POWs, not all parachutists by any means, from other regiments. And I think 2 days after that, we were flown in Ju-52s to Italy, the base of Italy, to an airfield near Capua, which is near Naples. And we were taken to Capua POW camp, which is run by Italians, and handed over to the Italians. And when I asked why this was, apparently because Tunisia had been apparently an Italian protectorate or something like that, I don't know. And that's why the Germans handed over to the WOPs. So that was a good thing, really, because the WOPs were quite nice and not a kind of militant race anywhere. And although Capua was pretty poor, we did get Red Cross parcels the first time I came across Red Cross parcels. And I did attempt to escape from there, but not very successfully, with a chap called Bucky Buchanan, who did manage to get away, but was caught again pretty soon afterwards. We were there for, I think, 6 weeks, well after Christmas. And then I was moved, together with several other people, to a camp at Kieti, where I met several chaps from the regiment, including John Measures, Jock Short, the adjutant, and Peter Namoff, a B company. It was an ex-aeronautica barracks, built miles away from an airfield, but it was Kieti was surrounded by a huge wall which had sentry posts all the way around it, and various bits where we couldn't go, which was the Italian quarters, of course, and bits of land that were, I can't remember the signs they had on them, but no access and that kind of thing. And we got down into a general POW existence, which was anything you like. We had a university, we had a play, players, and we had debating societies, we had three orchestras. There were 2,000 officers in this camp and about 500 British ORs who looked after us and did the cooking and things like that. It was really quite a hygienic camp. Anyway, I very quickly got on to the escape side of things and helped dig various tunnels, one of which a mule fell down when we got it through outside. I had a bit of a row with the escape committee. Of course, I was a bit young and stupid, and I had really very little idea of how I was going to get anywhere. I simply wanted to get out, which was not the way to really plan a proper escape. And I wasn't very popular with the escape committee, and particularly from a chap called Sam Derry, who'd recently taken it over, who was a gunner officer. Anyway, that was that. And time went on, eventually, of course, came the armistice. This was when the monarch, Mussolini, was overthrown. We're talking about 1943 now. Overthrown, and the monarch abdicated, and a general, I can't remember his name, Graziani, Badoglio, took over. And we were told by the SBO, the senior British officer, a man called Marshall, we will stay put. And anyone who attempts to escape will be arrested and will have to be will be tried by court-martial in due course, blah, blah, blah. Well, a lot of chaps said to hell with that, and they went over the wall with the Italian guards. Now, the very next morning, We were literally doing nothing when we could have been moving. We walked out of the gate, but according to Marshall, we shouldn't. And the next morning, German parachutists had arrived and took over in a big way. And they were the chaps who had actually rescued Mussolini from that glider thing they did. Same regiment. Very, very tough guys. And so a bit difficult with chaps like that to get away. And we were eventually taken in trucks, ex-Italian trucks, to Sulmona, which was about 50 k's away. Well, by this time I was desperate and thinking, now this is no good at all. And I got a pair of trousers. I'd been re-kitted up with battle dress and things like that. And I got a pair of trousers on an old place I found in this place at Sulmona, which was a derelict, very old POW camp, guarded by Germans. And the chaps who were guarding us were proper soldiers and not knowing about guards and the kind of tricks POWs can get up to. And I went and did a quick recce around this place, and I thought that the cookhouse, I watched an Italian truck driven by a German delivering rations, fresh rations, to the cookhouse. And I thought if I could get a couple of my friends, particularly two who spoke German, to talk to the guards patrolling the thing and take their attention away, I could get up onto the truck when it was unloaded. And because it only had one driver, no one else in it, if I could get in the back of it, maybe I could get out of the camp without anyone seeing me. And that's exactly what happened. I got a chap called Hewison Smith, who spoke very good German, and the other one who was a restaurateur in the RASC, and I simply cannot remember his name. I have letters from these chaps. They did the thing that I wanted them to do. They talked to a German who happened to be a Municher, and he was a chap who wanted to talk about things. And I managed to get on this truck while the driver was unloading the things. He got straight into it. It was a little Fiat. We had big high sides, and I kept myself right up to the hood. And I went straight out through the gate, and that was that. And he took us to a kind of a park in a wood, and he immediately started to camouflage the vehicle. And I thought, oh, God, he's going to see me. And he was sticking these branches in, but he didn't. And he then heard them calling out, Essen, Essen, Essen. So he went off to get his food. And I eventually got out of the truck and headed for the hills. Now, I'd got these dreadful trousers on. They were as thin as this. And I had no battle dress top. I just had a shirt. No food, absolutely nothing. So that wasn't a terribly clever plan anyway. But anyway, I was out of the camp. And I headed up to the hills. And I spent that night in a shepherd's hut, which had been occupied by sheep not long before. And then I got very cold, having fallen, not awarded a river. I thought, this is really not terribly clever, going on up, because it was getting colder and colder, and particularly at night. By this time, we were well into September, and the winter was fast approaching. So I waited in another shepherd's hut I found up there. They have these where the children go up and make the cheese and things like that in the summer, and they sleep in those things. And I could hear goats coming up and sheep the next morning with their bells, and there was a small boy with this herd, and I could see what he was doing. He came straight to the hut, which had a door that was not even on hinges, and when he opened it, he was very surprised to find myself there. Well, I didn't speak much Italian, but I had a basic which I'd learned in the camp. And I told him that I was an English officer and that I was a Scapari, and that I wanted to go to anyone who could help me, who could give me clothes and sustenance. And he said that I better come with him when he brought the flock down in the evening. And that's exactly what he did, and took me down to his father, who was a train driver, and had derailed his train in front of the camp, and he was very proud of that. That was when Badoglio took over. And eventually, I met a chap called Joe Pollock, who was our medical orderly, a Jewish chap who'd been in the Pioneer Corps, and he spoke seven languages, a brilliant chap. And he had started a little organization to help POWs. Now, I had met various others on the way down who were up in the hills, and it was desperately needed that we should do something, or someone should do something, to help these chaps and get clothes for them and food if possible, and what's more, to try and reward the peasants who were looking after them, who had nothing but actually gave their all. I knew that there was an embassy. It wasn't an embassy, in fact, but there was a representative, a British representative, to the Holy See in the Vatican. And so, through a girl that I had met, who later turned out to be a prostitute in the village, I got her to take a message to the Vatican, which she did. And from her, we got money, and I bought clothes. She bought clothes for us and gave them to various POWs. And by the time we left Sulmona, I had about six officers who were helping me. Their names don't matter. Bill Simpson, who wrote a very good book called The Vatican, and John Furman, Gil Smith from the tanks, two American officers, one in the Royal Air Force, but the other in the U.S. Army Air Corps, and two Frenchmen, Henri Payon, who was a French Foreign Legionist, and I can't remember the other one's name. I will do. And they helped, together with the priests and various other very brave Italians, to do these kind of things. But eventually, of course, we were betrayed, and we had to get out very quickly. Now, I had been told...
Who betrayed you?
Probably Fascisti Italiano. I don't know who actually did it. But there were some locals who knew we were there, and we knew that we were in the city of Sulmona at the time. And what... My great thing was that, you see, if we were caught, we would simply go back into the bag. But the people who looked after us and gave us shelter, they would be shot then, and finish with that. So it was very important that we shouldn't bring them into it. So I thought, regardless, although I'd been told only to come to Rome in very dire circumstances, and I thought these circumstances were dire enough. So I got Joe to get us some tickets, and we went off with Erida, this girl, the six of us, eight altogether, I think we were. We went by train to the outskirts of Rome, where we got out. The train was full of German soldiers, and they shared it with us. We were in a guards van, and we knew where there'd be checkpoints. Well, we told where there were checkpoints. By this time, we'd got a farmer with a horse and kind of trap, a little cart, and two girls we had with us. They got in the trap, and the rest of us walked. And we came to the checkpoint, which had one Italian soldier and one German soldier. And he went down and said we were studenti in medicina, and we were coming to Rome to take our exams. And these chaps said, oh, bring them along, take them through. And we all went through like this, saying thank you very much. Then Iride got us on a tram, and we went into Rome proper, where we stayed in a hotel, name of which I've forgotten, but I've got it recorded, which actually turned out to be a brothel which she was using. And from there, I contacted the Vatican, and only to find that the chap who was in there running it was Sam Derry, this chap I'd had a row with at the escape committee. And eventually, he took John Furman and Bill Simpson, who were both gunners in his regiment, to help. And I more or less bailed out of the... I still did help a bit, but I more or less bailed out of helping the escape people because I had other things to do, which was a bit of sabotage, but I never really got down to it. And so I had to do occasional jobs for Derry, and he was very kind about it, and we forgot our row. And then, of course, we stayed there, running this organization until the 4th of June when the troops came in.
What had put it into your mind to do some sabotage?
Well, I met a chap who'd come, an Italian officer, who'd come back through the lines, who actually had a job of contacting both the Communist and the Royal Party. It was a very difficult. So many groups were anti-Nazis, anti-fascisti too. And so I wanted to know who was the chap who would who really had got the power to do things. But when Sam heard about this, he said, Dennis, stop it, you know, for goodness sake, don't get involved in that. It's the last thing we want, because we were doing quite well in Rome. We had over 2,000 escapees from Russians, Jews, everything you could think of, British POWs, Indian POWs, everyone. So he didn't want the thing mucked up, and so I gave up the whole idea of it.
How much danger was there of being picked up by the Germans?
Well, quite a lot, but because we lived, for instance, rather well. We went to the best restaurants. The reason we did that was we were able to get money, and it's how my parents found I was alive. You won't believe this, but it's true. The butler, the so-called embassy in the Vatican, was a chap called John May, who was a Cockney. The minister was Sir Darcy Osborne, a very devout Roman Catholic of Irish extraction, a baronet, a very highly educated and nice man. But he didn't run the embassy at all. John May ran it. And when I remember saying, we got money, of course, to buy food for the people that were looking after us and that kind of thing. And I said, John, we really want some more money. He said, well, all you have to do is to give me a check. And I said, don't be stupid. I haven't got my checkbook with me. You know? And he said, no, just write it on a piece of paper. And so I said, really? And he said this to various other officers of mine, the six that were there. So we all wrote checks on our banks and gave them to John May, and he sent them back via the diplomatic bag to Lisbon and then back to UK. And my father, who was a banker anyway, he was rung up by Cox and Kings and said, would you care to come and verify your son's signature on a piece of paper we've got from him? And my father went along and said, yes, sure enough, that's his signature. And that's how they found out that I was alive. They had no idea where I was. Anyway, there we are. And so that was the end of that, really. There were lots of other things that I can't really remember about.
What happened when the Allies came into Rome?
Ah. Well, we had a great party in the hotel by the station, which is the, Nationale. The Nationale. And while we were there, of course we were all in civilian clothes, and we all had suits made for us by a wonderful tailor called Ciro. And we had shoes made by the royal shoemaker, all good stuff. And while we were having this party, who should come in but the British military police, who arrested us all. And we were all taken to the headquarters that they'd got, which was the simplest place to get out of. And we all got out very easily and came back to the party. And they didn't even bother to come back. When they must have found out we'd gone, they didn't even bother to come back and pick us up, because they realised that we were Brits and, you know, we were proper chaps. So that was the easiest escape we ever did. So that was that. And then I was asked if I wanted to stay on, because we'd got a commission going to settle all the accounts that we had made with the peasants and people who'd looked after us. And also, they wanted to make various recommendations for various medals and things for people who had been very brave. So I was asked if I wanted to join this organisation, which Bill Simpson and John Furman had, and Sam Derry was going to run it. And I said,